Deezer. Deezer. Originals.
This is Defending in Numbers.
Here we are, another week, Defending in Numbers, the show where we walk down the corridor of uncertainty, pretending to know a little bit more about football than we really do. My name is Rob Armstrong, and I'm pretending. However, in the corner of the room is hot take Jake the Snake with a fine moustache. He's not pretending anything. He's certainly not pretending to have gone through puberty. How are you, Jake?
Well, I committed the sin of getting rid of too much around it, so now it's really prominent and I'm conscious of it. So
it's not a sin, Jake. It's fantastic. And of course, joined once again by the most electrifying man in all of football statistics, George Ellick. How are you doing?
I'm hoping one day you're going to drop the statistics and just have the most electrifying man in football.
I've never seen you play anything, let alone football.
Fair enough.
If you are listening on Deezer or iTunes or any of the other places where you get your podcasts, make sure you subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, press the old, the old review button with the stars in it. That's the one.
The old review button.
Yeah. And no, hold on. It's a rate button with the stars in it. And then you review it using your words. And you'll make Hot Take Jake the Snake a very rich man. He needs to buy moustache grooming kits, so get him up that algorithm.
Is it that bad?
No, it looks great.
Perfect.
But, you know,
clean it up.
Nothing isn't improved by grooming, Jake. And on that smooth transition, let's start with Week by Numbers.
The Week by Numbers.
Right then, you little schmucks. Let's talk some numbers, starting with the number 15. And 15 of the last 30 England players to earn a debut have been coached by Mauricio Pochettino. So why don't we just make him England manager? Because he seems to know what he's doing with our young players, whether it's at Southampton or now it's at Tottenham. How much money do we have to throw at him, George? How much money would you personally throw at him out of your wallet?
I don't know, really. I think he's probably doing a better job for England by being Spurs manager than he would be if he was England manager, bringing this kind of talent through. But then at the same time, I don't think he'd want to be England manager particularly, and B, he's in a very lucky position where part of his kind of DNA of his manager now is to bring through youth players. If you look at the likes of Antonio Conte or Jose Mourinho or Pep Guardiola as well, it's not within their kind of remit to do so. Why would Guardiola bring in a young centre-back coming through their academy when they can go out and spend 40 million, 50 million on John Stones? Because at the end of the day, it's his job that's on the line. Whereas with Pochettino, certainly at Southampton, if you look at what kind of fans and owners are looking for in a Southampton job, I would say that bringing youth talent through is probably number one on the list. So they are, you know, their job would be in jeopardy if they're not doing that. And the same probably goes at Spurs as well, where Daniel Levy is obviously loath to spend big money on players. It's part of his job to bring young players through. So whilst Pochettino certainly deserves our respect and praise for doing this, I think at the same time, he is blessed to be in a job that has a great pool of English talent in his last two clubs in the Premier League, and B, where he's actively encouraged to use them.
How many youth players have you brought through recently, Jake?
None at all. I can't claim to have any England debutants that have been trained under my wing.
Proud of that?
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm not at all.
Okay.
I wish I was Mauricio Pochettino, actually, because he is a sensational manager. As George said, the work he's done at Tottenham is incredible. And the thing is with him, it's not actually just young players. The average age of those debutants is 23 years, 97 days old. So in general, he's bringing through the young players and he's giving them a chance. The youngest England debutant under Pochettino is Luke Shaw, who was 18 when he made his England debut. Obviously, that's not gone to plan with his injuries and stuff. But he also got Ricky Lambert an England debut, who obviously recently retired.
He's brought the average right up.
Yeah, exactly. So he was 31 when he got his England debut. But I think Pochettino he's excellent at developing young players, but he's also squeezes absolutely every bit of potential out of the players he has. If you look at Christian Eriksen, for example, he's gone up a new level. He's not necessarily old and he's not English, but he's a player that under Pochettino has transformed himself and, again, is probably criminally underrated. One of the best players in the league at the moment. And Harry Kane as well. Again, he is still relatively young, but Pochettino's taken him as a striker to a completely new level. And with the amount of goals he's scoring, we're talking him about Harry Kane now with the likes of Lewandowski, with the likes of Cavani, and then even touching Ronaldo and Messi levels in terms of pure goal scoring. So Pochettino, I agree with George in the fact that he is probably better doing this at Spurs. He's got all the tools to make these players, and then he's giving everything Gareth Southgate needs to try and be successful. And I think it's time we sort of don't be embarrassed about just showing how much we rely on him. I think Gareth Southgate referred to him as sort of England's secret weapon. And I just think we should be packing this England team with as much Spurs talent as possible, because the likes of Spain and Germany have proven that when you have a team that's played together in the same style, in the same way for years, that can only breed success. So with Tottenham players, if we're using five or six in each starting 11, then they have this awareness of how to play with each other, especially in the three at the back system that Spurs used so well last season. Kyle Walker obviously counts as an old Spurs. He'll know Harry Kane. If we can pack England with these Spurs players that Pochettino is developing and obviously coaching incredibly well, then we almost don't need him as England manager. We just hope someone in the position can understand that's what is probably the best course of action.
I think Gareth Southgate should give Pochettino a call and say, would you start Eric Dier and Jordan Henderson as midfield two against bad teams? And then he will get his answer as to whether or not he should do that ever again.
Do you reckon it's too late for him to get Fernando Llorente an England call-up?
Probably, yeah.
He's just too old, isn't he?
He's too old.
That's what's stopping
him. That's the only thing in the way, though.
And speaking of too old, 44, the next number, and that's how old Egypt's goalkeeper Essem El Hadary is, who qualified for the World Cup last weekend after 22 years in the national team. He's got 156 caps and he's won the African Cup of Nations four times. And Egypt are one of those teams, despite the fact they, when I was growing up, they seemed to win the African Cup of Nations every year. But how have they gone so long without getting in the World Cup? We saw how much it meant to them with the celebrations when Salah scored and everything like that in the last minute with the penalty. They've had good players come through there. How have they missed out so many times?
It's hard to say. I think it's just years and years of underachievement, really. As you say, it's not like they've been perpetually bad. They've had successes in AFCON. They've had very, very good players coming through. It's just a case of a bit of a hoodoo. I think sometimes when you go for so long and not qualifying, we saw with Wales as well over the earlier this week, who haven't qualified for over 50 years, and they fall at the last hurdle again when they've got a home game against Ireland to win to get into the playoffs and maybe qualify automatically, and they fall short. And I think having that mental block, and we see it with England every major tournament, you know, there's absolutely no way, despite what anyone says, there's no way that we should be as poor as we are. There's no way that we should have made a semi since only once in 96. I'd have to say it's just bad, basically bad luck. And you saw by how much it meant to them and how much it meant to the players, how much it meant to the fans, that this was a huge, huge step to overcome, and good they've finally done it.
He's like the Egyptian Nikopolidis, isn't he? Is that his name, the Greek goalkeeper who was grey since the age of 9?
Yeah. He's like Buffon as well. Buffon's obviously 39 and still playing. But the number of caps you mentioned as well, it's... We all sort of hail Buffon as this sort of eternal, immortal goalkeeper in Europe, but like there are these African goalies. And so Buffon's the fourth most capped international of all time, and El Hadary drops down a bit, obviously, with a bit less. But to be going at 44 years old and playing really well, in the most recent African Cup of Nations, he saved two penalties in the semi-final, the penalty shootout, maybe even the quarter-final, actually. I might have got my wires crossed there. But he's got two penalties and four clean sheets in that tournament. They lost to Cameroon in the final, but at 44 years old, he was one of their best players in that tournament. The old cliche that age is just a number rings very true with him. He'll just be hoping that the likes of Mohamed Salah, and they've obviously got Elneny from Arsenal, a couple of Premier League players in there. They're usually the stars of the team, and they've also got Stoke's young winger / forward, which they use in every position, Ramadan Sobhi, who... again, could probably be looking at that World Cup to sort of make a claim. A lot of hype about him when Stoke bought him, and he's not really done much. So they've got a good bunch of players. And as you said, they've always had a good bunch of players. But to finally get into the World Cup, they could just end up doing what Nigeria, the other African team that are sort of most famous for. Nigeria always get in the World Cup and usually fall short. So getting to the World Cup is one thing. They've hurdled that obstacle, but now it's... Can they really make an impact at that tournament?
Yeah, they definitely get a shock in them, I think.
Definitely, we saw in Brazil, you know, Algeria were very, very competitive, very good. I think that there's definitely scope for African teams to be good, and I think that there's, you know, carrying momentum through as Egypt will. They're definitely a banana skin for anyone. I think that if you look at this World Cup upcoming, I mean, I'd say that Brazil and possibly Germany are really the only two teams that you can't really find fault in. Or struggle to. I think Brazil certainly looked very, very strong. And in that respect, I think that it could be open, like we saw in the Euros last year, it could be open for something, for someone to go on a run and get later on in the competition.
Well, someone who's not going to be at the World Cup this year is old Arjen Robben, who retired last night. The glass man, as he called it. What did you say? The glass man lasted longest?
Yeah, lasted longest.
Is he the all-time record caps holder for Netflix?
No, no, he's ninth.
He's ninth. Oh, so, nowhere near. Forget it then. But he has got 37 goals. That's the number. I forgot about the numbers part. 37 goals. So he retired from the Netherlands last night. Joint fourth on the all-time goal scorers list. The same as Dennis Bergkamp. Do you feel he is maybe a little bit underappreciated as a Netherlands player? Do you think maybe they underachieved a bit, given that they had that World Cup final and then it was the World Cup final, wasn't it? And then the semi-final in 2014. Do you think that maybe with that squad of players, particularly how it's ended up now with them not even qualifying, do you think that there maybe should be an extra honour on Arjen Robben's list?
I mean, I think that the sad fact is that his Holland legacy or Netherlands legacy will go down probably as failure. You know, you get to that World Cup final, which is such a turning point. I think there was so much positivity around that squad of players and that team at the time. And at the end of the day, for the twinkle, you know, the twilight of Arjen Robben's career, that they've been abject and very, very poor. And I think as in international football, unlike club football, that's probably where you look to your senior players to really drag you through it. And their failure to qualify for two major tournaments in a row is basically unacceptable, to be honest.
Yeah.
So first time they've failed to do like consecutive major tournaments, not qualifying since 1984-86. So this is a really dark time for the Netherlands. But with Arjen Robben, you said his 37 goals, that's joint fourth. His caps, he's 96 caps with his joint ninth. Like we said, that's still pretty impressive. He's had and considering he is known as the glass man, those injuries have kept him back from earning more. I think like a fully fit player, even not playing until 33, would have got 100 caps, given his ability. Because Arjen Robben is a phenomenal player. Again, he's predictable or whatever it is. But the fact that for 30 years, he's had a 14-year career at Netherlands. All those 14 years, you know exactly which way he's going to go and no one's really been able to stop him.
Yeah.
He was their best player in this qualifying tournament, the only one really scoring goals. He got two in their most recent game to get a joint with Dennis Bergkamp. He got a hat-trick in one of the games as well. In terms of his legacy, I think from what I was seeing, the reaction of his retirement, Netherlands fans are almost torn with what he's done. They appreciate how marvellous a player he is. But obviously, there was that one time during the 2010 World Cup where he missed the one-on-one with Casillas.
Yeah, that's the final, isn't it?
Yeah, so that was in the final. But the story behind that's quite funny because he pulled his hamstring attempting a back heel in like the final warm-up game. He went to this controversial physio to get treatment, Dick Van Toorn. He went to his house. And I know, but the videos of Arjen Robben.
Dick Van Toorn.
Yeah, or two, and it's two
what
O's.
Name, what name for a physio?
Yeah, exactly, a two and hamstring. Dear. But he went there and it was like, you can see the videos of him appearing, like the amount of press that were outside this physio's house. Arjen Robben coming out saying, yeah, my hamstring's fine. Didn't play in the first few games. Came on and Netherlands scored from his deflected effort from a classic cut inside run. And I just think he almost got them to that final, but then this fitness issue that's played his probably whole career stopped him from becoming one of the world's best. Because in terms of individual talent, when he was on form, like even when he was playing for Chelsea, Arjen Robben's one of my favourite players to watch. As I said, you know where he's going, but there's that anticipation of when will he cut in, when will he bend it in the bottom corner. So yeah, 96 caps, 37 goals, and 29 assists to go with that. He was directly involved in a goal every 112 minutes for Netherlands.
It's unbelievable effort.
So he's a brilliant player. And as George said, sadly, it's probably going to be seen as a failure because they never sealed that trophy that he would have wanted as well.
Yeah. Imagine us considering an England player a failure after getting to a World Cup final, a World Cup semi-final.
Well, mate, all the England players at the moment apparently failures for getting into a World Cup.
Yeah, so. by walking there.
Yeah, exactly. by literally qualifying with such ease. And we should be ashamed, apparently.
Yeah.
Clowns.
Speaking of disgraceful England, let's maybe move on to the number 334,000, which is the population of our old friends, Iceland. Now the smallest country, population-wise, ever to qualify for the World Cup. When you compare it to the USA last night, who have 323 million, they didn't qualify. How does that rank in terms of how much credit should we pay to the Icelandic Football Federation for getting their youth systems and their football systems in such a state that they've managed to qualify for two international tournaments and basically show up I mean, I'm not going to call England an international superpower or anything, but an established tournament team. At the previous one, they finished above Portugal in the groups as well, and they went on to win it.
I think they're a huge sign of how a system is probably more important in international football than individual quality. For all of the chat about Ronaldo during the Portugal success at the Euros, that was actually a team that was based on basically a solid back four, except for that weird game against Hungary, and I think Iceland are the same. They have a consistent starting lineup. They play a system they know that works. They play very much on the counter. They're very, very happy putting 11 men behind the ball, and they deserve huge credit for that. It's international football, because you don't train every day, because you only play with each other 6 or 7 times a year. It's important to have that, you know, that almost muscle memory where you know how you're going to play and you know how you're going to set up. And they've done that very, very well. I've just got this feeling that England are going to be drawn up against them in the World Cup again. It's going to be like Sweden during the 90s and the early noughties, where we just come unstuck every time. But they deserve absolutely immense credit. What an achievement for them.
I've seen a lot of sort of 4G pitches and all weather pitches and domes where they play football and stuff over there. So it seems to me that they're getting it right at every level, building up to the national team. I feel like we're maybe about to see sort of an influx of young Icelandic players in Europe turning up at teams and then becoming, to be fair, a force that they shouldn't be.
It'll go one of two ways. Either there'll be their resources will be shown up, and this will be shown as you know, to coin the old English phrase, a golden generation, and then they'll revert to the norm, or it'll inspire a generation of Icelandic talent to go to their, you know, to make the most of the facilities open to them, and they'll go from strength to strength. But realistically, with a population that size, I mean, think that's kind of something like 3 times the capacity of Wembley. I mean, it's it's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, there's so many ridiculous stats that are going around.
With that pool, it's very unlikely they'll be able to sustain that level, I would have thought.
It's a huge credit, though, as we said, for getting them there. The massive investment in infrastructure and giving those pitches and providing the platform and providing the coaches as well with sort of knowledge of football. Yeah. That sounds really patronizing, but a lot of teams just have like very sort of proud men that take over the national team and their way is the only way. But Iceland have sort of brought together this team that knows what they're doing, and their full-time manager now is actually a part-time dentist. Yeah. So it just shows that sort of they are defying all the odds in terms of having this tiny population. It's the first side that have under a million in population that have qualified. Trinidad and Tobago were the other smallest, with 1.3 million. So this is a huge milestone for them. And the fact that they're ranked 22nd in the world is pretty impressive. We've gone over before that those rankings can be a bit skewed, and it's almost a game of poker how you get up the rankings. But considering in 2012 that they were at their lowest ever ranking of 131st, In 5 years to go to top 20 in the world, they've just dropped 2 places. But to go to top 20 in the world and qualify for back to back major tournaments they deserve massive credit for the team, the players. As George said, they play a certain style. They're not embarrassed to sit behind the ball. Only Northern Ireland in Euro 2016 created fewer chances during the group stages. Obviously, it gets a bit skewed because teams start to play more games. But in terms of when everyone played the same amount of games, they created 16 chances and went through top of the group. So they play a certain style. They're not embarrassed to play that style, and they use players like Sigurdsson as a weapon. Like, they use his set piece delivery. They use things that they do well to go far in the competition, and they deserve massive credit for at every level, the country, the support from the fans, the infrastructure, and the players' performances, and their dentist manager as well.
Yeah, just put the money in the right places, right? Which is what you always do, Jake.
Yeah, I do.
You've never misspent a penny.
No, back pocket.
A man who I imagine is a very wise spender, particularly when it comes to investing on wines. St. Andrea Pirlo. He announced he was going to retire last week. 570 career league appearances for him. So where do we think he ranks when you talk about the all-time great midfielders? You look at the clubs he's played at. I mean, New York City FC, that's the big one. You look at the clubs, he's played at both Milan clubs, Juventus, he's won so many trophies, Champions Leagues, World Cups. He must be up there with the very best of them.
Yeah, he's had an incredible career. I think an amazing thing about his career is his ability to reinvent himself as a footballer during it. if you look at the Pirlo in his Milan days early on, he wasn't that kind of quarterback sitting holding the field. He was an energetic guy playing further forward who used to get forward. And then once he was deemed surplus to requirements and ended up going on a free transfer to Juve, that's where, you know, he really hit the world stage, I'd say, into his early 30s, and where he began to get the plaudits that probably his talent always deserves. I still used to get frustrated watching him sometimes because in that time, because it almost got to the stage where every time he got the ball, he was trying to play a nice 60-yard crossfield ball over the top, which, you know, they're not always going to come off. But his, you know, the legacy that he'll have at his clubs and Italy and basically on football as a whole, you've got to be impressed with him as a player.
He's definitely a serial winner. The fact that he won 5 consecutive league titles in Italy, one was with Milan, and then, as George said, they sort of said, "Nah, you're on the decline." He went to Juventus and then won 4 in a row. He is a bit of a marvel, and I think he almost everyone loves him because of how cool he is and how sort of composed he is. But because he hasn't got that really like garish personality, you almost sort of lose track of how good he is. The fact that nothing is a big moment for him. He's composed at every moment. That the Panenka against England probably sums him up. That's probably the best moment in one moment in his career that sums him up perfectly.
Worst moment.
For us, it was bad. But in terms of Andrea Pirlo stepping up, just completely mind gaming Joe Hart, being as cool as ever, chipping it down the middle, pure nonchalance, but devastating.
Imagine outsmarting Joe Hart.
Imagine. But England were ahead in the shootout when he did that. So if he had missed that, England would have been too clear.
But that's what I mean. It's that sort of decision making. As George said, yeah, he towards the end, maybe he was becoming too free in his quarterback role and pinging it. But I've looked at it as like a twilight of his career because it's hard to get hold of some data before that. But in his last 3 seasons, he completed 5,000 passes, which was more than any Juventus player. That was 88% accuracy. And it goes to show that he, as George said again, he reinvented himself into that role, became this absolute pass master, and was also pretty good at free kicks, scoring 11 in that time, which was more than any other player in Europe's top 5 leagues. 18 trophies across his career. There are so many numbers you can talk about with Andrea Pirlo. Yeah, he is one of the best midfielders ever, because he has won everything, and he did it so often. Yeah. It wasn't just a one-time thing.
We've lost a few of the old masters recently. Got here on the list. We've got Xabi Alonso, Paul Scholes, Totti, all in recent years. Like just
Harry Winks left, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The old master Harry Winks.
He'll be next.
All right then, let's move on away from these god-awful numbers and into the section of pure embarrassment. I'm embarrassed to ask.
To ask.
Right then, mofos. Ballon d'Or shortlist came out this week. How are they choosing that? Because I noticed that obviously we all know it's Messi and Ronaldo come 1 and 2, but then there's these 28 other players, and not on the list is someone like Alexis Sanchez and Keylor Navas and Carvajal and players like that. Sanchez obviously didn't win the Champions League, but the other two did. Also, no Andy Carroll.
Shocking.
How are they choosing this?
He didn't even get a Puskas nomination.
Sadio Mane and Philip Coutinho are in it.
Exactly. Coutinho was injured for 3 months.
It was very, very strange.
There were
that.
Some bizarre choices, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it changed last year. So France Football and FIFA have always had separate awards. And I think in 2010, they decided to...
The best FIFA awards, isn't it called? Something ridiculous. Isn't it called like the FIFA best player. Award?
Yeah. And they sort of had different awards basically since inception about 60-odd years ago. I think Stanley Matthews is the first person to win the France Football Ballon d'Or. And then about 6 years ago, I think probably under some pressure from Mr. Blatter, they decided to unite the awards basically. And then it became a vote amongst the, as it is now with the FIFA award, a vote amongst captains internationally and managers. And then last year, they decided, Gianni Infantino decided that they wanted to have their own award back again, which I think is probably backfired, because I don't think anyone's going to really care when the FIFA nominees come out in about a week or so. So now it's just a case of basically a panel of French journalists, from what I can tell, are the people who choose the shortlist, which maybe goes, I mean, Sadio Mane started at Metz. I don't know if that, you know, necessarily players who they have an affinity to are getting preferential treatment. I'm not sure. But it does seem slightly bizarre that such an important, basically an award that is so iconic now, can be decided in a pretty similar way to like the Football Writers Award in England. It's just a group of guys saying who they think the best players have been.
So is Ballon d'Or not the best FIFA best ever best
Bosto.
Bisto best player ever FIFA men's award now? Is it Ballon d'Or's credibility been reduced by the fact that it's just four blokes?
I don't think it's been reduced at all, because that's what it started off as. France Football have been running it since 1958. It's only recently that they merged with FIFA. So last year, 173 journalists from around the world voted. So it's not just France, but it's... I understand what George is saying. Like, this year was unprecedented for Ligue 1. They had four French people in it, which is the most by any nation. And Ligue 1 had four players, a total as well. La Liga had 11 players in it, and seven were from Real Madrid. So again, there's the one argument with sort of these Ballon d'Or and individual awards is that for some reason the kicker always seems to be trophies won, which is indicative of how your team plays. So the fact that almost all these Real Madrid players are in the Ballon d'Or shortlist, they're probably saying they're the best team, they won the biggest trophy, let's put them all in. But in terms of how the journalists go about deciding it, it's a subjective thing, isn't it? There's the eternal Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo debate. It's been 11 consecutive years where they've both been nominated. So that's been going on forever. And as you said, it's a choice between those two really again. But there's always interesting things in terms of, like, how do you look at these nominees and decide who's best? Do we look at pure goal scoring? Because in that case, it's Messi this year. He's got 40 after his hat trick that saved Argentina from their World Cup misery. He's got 49 goals in 49 games this calendar year for club and country. Second on that list is Lewandowski, followed by Harry Kane, who are both in the 40s. Ronaldo's got 42 in 42 games. In terms of goal scoring, that's the easiest number to look at when you're deciding these awards. But then how will a goalkeeper ever win it? David De Gea's got the most clean sheets in 2017 with 14. Jan Oblak's nominated this year. He's kept more clean sheets than conceded goals for Atletico Madrid in La Liga. Yeah. 50 and 49. There's no real number or any way to determine it. And it becomes, again, it just becomes a point of preference. And I really like the award. People weren't liking the 5x5 release of all the players, but I quite liked it. They made a day of it as it was. And it was interesting to see some of the new names come up there. But again, it will be between Ronaldo and Messi. And as I said, given Ronaldo won the Champions League, Super Cup, La Liga and the Supercoppa, he's probably going to take fifth and go level with Lionel Messi in the all-time rankings.
Those goals he was scoring in the knockout stage of the Champions League as well, I think that cemented it for him, really, didn't he? Because he kind of dragged them.
Well, first player to score back-to-back hat-tricks in a knockout round of the Champions League.
I just don't understand how Coutinho's in it. I mean, I can't... like with Mane, there's something that kind of...
I really rate about
it. Yeah, so do I. And he's had a very... You know, he's almost had a breakthrough year, whereas Coutinho hasn't played any Champions League football, really. I mean, he's basically been injured for a long time.
Especially when you get a player like Thomas Lemar didn't make it.
No,
it?
I mean...
And Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
What you mentioned earlier.
I mean, Lemar got to a Champions League semi-final. He had an incredible year on the wing. He played for this team. He won a league completely, you know, against any expectation to do so. I mean, I'd love to know how Coutinho could be above Lamar.
Christian Eriksen created the most chances in 2017 as well in Europe's top five leagues. He's one that sort of people were really picking a bone with. Like Kevin De Bruyne got in there, which I think he didn't get nominated for the 55-man shortlist for the best awards. Everyone was fuming about that.
Mm.
France Football might have said, look at the reaction here, put Kevin De Bruyne in, but then they've missed out on another name. Now there's a backlash, Christian Eriksen. So it is always going to be difficult to select 30 players. And I said, what do you even base that on? How many goalkeepers do you get in? What defenders are ever going to win it? What do you quantify? Like Ramos won the most headers for Real Madrid in the Champions League and the La Liga last season. But what does that mean compared to 49 goals?
It just takes a ropey World Cup, doesn't it? When it 2006, the World Cup where all the scores were 1-0.
Yeah, Cannavaro
on it.
Yeah.
5'10" defender.
That's all it takes. Hopefully there's a ropey year next year and Andy Carroll can finally get his hands on that big golden ball. Anyway, next up, who's this fella?
Who's this fella?
Right, the professional, Leon Goretzka. A German who, by all accounts, is a backheel merchant.
One backheel goal.
That's all I know him for. Apparently, he's got 6 goals in 12 appearances, but I have no idea who he is, even though he's playing every week at Schalke. Tell me his story, guys. Tell me all about man like Leon Goretzka.
He's just one of the many, 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 many young German players who are afforded game time in the Bundesliga, and therefore, you know, is all better for it. He's played for the last couple of seasons for Schalke. He was part of Germany's Confederations Cup successful side. I've seen quotes comparing him to Mesut Özil, which I think are slightly wider than mark. But you know, he's as I said, he's one of many. He's Germany have this pool of talent that they are consistently getting first team football. If you look at England and how that changes, you know, the likes of Harry Winks are an anomaly rather than a regular, and he's 22. The same age as Goretzka, who's been playing for a couple of years now. I think he's got two goals in his five starts for Schalke this season in the Bundesliga. He does like to get forward. He likes to kind of break through into that 10 role sometimes. Unlike Özil, his passing stats aren't particularly impressive. I think he averages about 34 per game at just over 70% success rate, which is, you know, fairly poor for a midfielder. But yeah, no, he's an exciting talent and someone who's certainly having a bit of a breakthrough season this year internationally.
Is he better than you, Jake?
Yeah, definitely. Comfortably, I think. But yeah, I think he breakthrough season in the fact that I think he's, again, he's been a curse of being so good at so many things that he's played in so many different roles already. When he first started, he was at VfL Bochum. And in
great accent.
Yeah, I tried.
Welcome.
And in 2012, he won the Fritz Walter gold medal for the under 17 category. So in terms of being a talent in Germany, they've had an eye on him for a long time. And as George said, he's playing more and more for Schalke. I think he's got 50 starts in the last three seasons now. So he's definitely staked a claim in that side. But he's only scored 12 goals in 126 games across all competitions. But the fact that he's got this 6-in-12 for Germany, I think there's a real sort of emphasis on the fact that he's being moved further up the pitch. He is, as I said, he's a very talented midfielder in the fact that he can do almost everything. And to find a number to support that, I worked out that last season, he played 30 league games, which is fewer than most people play in a season, sort of top notch. And he was the only player that made 70 plus interceptions and had 50 plus shots. So again, that seems quite forced, but it was the one way to show that, yeah, he's intercepting the ball and he's got this sort of defensive role, but in midfield, he can also break forward and 50 shots. I know he said he hasn't scored many goals, but he's got this attacking instinct. And for Germany, they're playing him in this number 10 role. But as George said, I don't think he's anything like Mesut Özil in the fact that he'll sit in that pocket and create chances for his team. He wants to be the one that's scoring. And when they play with these wide wingbacks, Sané and Brandt played in the most recent game, Goretzka is the player that arrives behind their centre forward. And as we saw, he managed to turn a goal in with his back heel. He managed to bounce it off the floor into the top corner. It was a pretty special goal, and it speaks volumes for his talent. Last season, he won 66 tackles, completed 35 take-ons, created 34 chances. And with these numbers, with the 77 interceptions and the 51 shots,
bloody hell, that's a lot of numbers.
Yeah, I know I'm bombarding there, but that's what I mean. He's got them all across the board, and you're slowly building this really complete midfielder. And his former manager at Bochum said he was the talent of the century. So that's a big pressure on him.
But the next Ravel Morrison.
Yeah, exactly. The next Ravel Morrison / Freddie Adu into one. But he's definitely a big talent, and I think Germany are playing him in a really interesting fashion, and he's thriving for it. And we'll slowly start seeing that rather than a more defensive role for Schalke, he'll get more and more up the pitch, and you'll start seeing these. I've seen people compare him to Frank Lampard, just the fact that he likes to shoot. But that isn't that far off. Someone that's very intelligent, times his run well, and rather than creating through actual passes or through balls, Goretzka's creating through his runs and making chances for himself. So he's definitely one to look out for, and a really exciting talent as well. 6'2", which means Jose Mourinho will probably buy him next summer.
But does he have an A star in Latin GCSE?
I'm not sure. I didn't look at his GCSE results.
Unless he's got that, he'll never be Lampard, will he?
Never. Latin, wasn't it?
What did I say?
Yeah.
You said Latin, didn't you?
Yeah. I didn't hear you say it.
Well, call me out.
You can tell I got it.
In front of all our friends on the podcast. So he's a little bit of a goal scorer for Germany, but not so much for his club. He's not going to be a bit of a Podolski situation, is he, where he's just much better for...
He scored 2-5 this season.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's moving further forward. He played as a defensive midfielder, then became this box-to-box guy, and now... sort of becoming that 10, but not a creative 10.
He's doing a reverse Alan Smith.
There you go. That's the technical name for it.
Both his legs intact. Yeah. All right then. Well, Alan Smith's legs weren't intact for long, and neither will your bodies after you shoot these stat bullets at each other in the very smoothly transitioned Stats Showdown.
Stats Showdown.
All right then. You no good dirty SOBs looking at each other with contempt, ready to beat each other in a stat showdown of a lifetime. Best out of three. Jake, you're looking at me. You've got the moustache. You can go first. Impress me with a stat.
I knew there was a reason for it.
Give me ammunition.
Right. Looking ahead to this weekend's biggest game in the Premier League. Man United, Liverpool.
Burnley, West Ham.
Not Burnley, West Ham, sorry. The man of the moment, Marcus Rashford. If he scores against Liverpool, he will have scored more goals as a teenager for Man United than Ryan Giggs in the Premier League.
How is that? How old is he? 19.
So he's 19, and his birthday's at the end of October. So more than Ryan Giggs, 12. Wayne Rooney's actually leading that on 15.
Right. So over in the Bundesliga, we have Borussia Dortmund against RB Leipzig in a very, very big game.
Rasenballsport.
Correct. Yeah. How'd you know that?
You just pick those ones up.
Lots to talk about Naby Keita, who's going to Liverpool next season, and how his take on stats last year was so impressive. And he comes back from suspension for this game after a three-game ban. Naby Keita is averaging 5.4 successful take-ons per 90 this season compared to 3.1 last season. And that is higher than take-on rival Christian Pulisic, who's averaging 3.4, who will be his opponent.
Okay. Naby Keita getting better than last year when everyone, well, you two said he was the best player that's ever going to exist. Or Marcus Rashford being better than Giggsy. Different position, but still interesting. I'm going to go 1-0 to Jake.
Fair enough.
1-0 to Jake.
Yes, I thought my delivery was poor then.
Yeah, it's the way you tell him.
Probably
yeah,
you could have hyped that. I love take-ons as well, so.
Yeah. It's weird that I thought it was strange. Yeah, what you said was strange too, so.
Yeah. Teenage sensation.
Time for you to take on Jake with your next step. Am I right, lads? Yes, I am. Rate, review, subscribe.
Jermaine Defoe comes up against his former club Spurs this weekend. Last season, he was caught offside a whopping 36 times for Sunderland. Shockingly, this season, so far, he's only strayed past the last defender once.
Okay. I like an offside stat, you know.
Weird stat. I know you like those.
I like a wacky stat.
Wacky stat.
You know me. Jake, are you going to out-whack that?
No.
But also weirdly, Bournemouth only been caught offside four times all season, which is really weird.
It's like they're not attacking.
Yeah. I Arsenal 21. I mean, they're second highest.
Lacazette.
Yeah. Poor. I mean, Defoe, you think? Anyway.
Poor I know. No, as usual, I don't have the wacky ones, which, again, time after time, I should learn just to find the wackiest thing. But I'm going to go back to Iron Robin because I love him so much. And if he scores for Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga this weekend, he will become their all-time top-scoring foreign player with 93 goals in the Bundesliga, beating Giovanni Elbert. So he's that good. He's going to become Bayern Munich's top-scoring non-German.
Had a lot of Germans though, haven't they, Bayern?
He's in top 10 of the all-time list as well. So,
well, come back to me when he's number one at that. Oh, George, that's your round.
Wacky wins again. Wacky races. They should rename this Wacky Races.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what it's turned into.
All right then, Jake. All right. Come back at him, bro.
Come back with me. I'm going to go... to my man. So Kylian Mbappe was actually nominated for the Ballon d'Or at 18 years old. Wow.
Good for him.
If he scores one more Champions League goal, which kicks off again next week, he will score more goals. I'm going back to teenagers here. He will have scored more Champions League goals than any other teenager in the history of the competition, bettering Patrick Kluivert's 7. Be his 8th goal. And 6 of those came in the knockout stages.
Fair play. Fair play for that last bit. You might have clinched it there.
Oh!
George.
I didn't even say what I was going to say.
I know. But that last bit, I was like, wow.
Dele Alli didn't enjoy as fruitful a September as Harry Kane, scoring no goals and 1 assists. But to make it even worse for Dele, no player has lost possession in the Premier League more than Dele Alli this season, with 47, averaging 6.8 per 90 compared to 4.7 per 90 last season.
Dele.
I'm nervous.
You should be.
Oh, no.
Because I'm going to leave you in suspense for 5 seconds while I have a little think. Jake wins.
Oh, yes.
Kylian Mbappe. See, I gave you the eyes.
That's not the first time that Mbappe will probably beat Dele Alli in their careers.
Yes.
It was that knockout bit. Six of them coming in the knockouts.
If you want Kylian Mbappe Champions League records, I've got so many.
I'll just leave it on, then you can just carry on.
Should we just do a final 5 minutes and be reeling them off? Kylian Mbappe is.
No.
No.
Jake, if people want to hear your Kylian Mbappe records, where can they find you?
They can find me at Jake Entwistle on Twitter, as usual. No H in the whistle part.
And George, you're the most electrifying man on Twitter, apparently. It's all nudes. Where can people find them?
I'm getting loads of new followers now. At George Elek, E-L-E-K is how you spell Elek.
And you can find me at Rob Armstrong _WH. And hopefully you can find us on Deezer, iTunes and all the other podcast places. I mean, not hopefully, you definitely can. But you should subscribe. And next week, join us again for Defending in Numbers.
Defending in Numbers is a Deezer Originals production. You can find and download more episodes on Deezer and all major podcast providers.